Okay, this is our final hour. Our special guest, Christopher DeChesire. We're talking about his work, Surviving Evidence. We'll tell you where you can get this work when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Christopher DeChesire with us. Chris, where do you get your book, Surviving Evidence?
Well, there are three main places. The publisher, Dark Moon Press. Everyone knows Amazon.com for the Kindle or the paperback. And then, of course, if they want me to sign it, which is always fun for me to do, then they can contact me on my good old Facebook page, which is my name and CTD and Haunting, and I can do that for them.
We're going to go to calls in a second. Stories and questions. How would you rate this episode in your life?
Oh, my gosh. In terms of numerically or in terms of meaning?
Meaning.
Well, I think it made me a better person. I think that when I was younger, I thought I knew everything. Now that I realize I don't, I search more answers. It makes me more understanding, open-minded. And being a teacher, I think that helps me reach out to my students to help them learn about their lives, what they need to do to get ahead in their lives.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Philadelphia. Dennis is with us, City of Brotherly Love. Hello, Dennis.
Good morning, George and Chris.
Good morning.
Yeah, I have a comment and a question that will lead into the question. You know, people that have experienced, you experience what I continually experience, you got to deal with people on the three fronts. You got to deal with the atheists that don't believe in nothing. You have to believe in the people that are believers in organized religion, and people that are involved in organized religion, very few and far between really believe in spirits. They only believe in, the majority believe in that it's got to be demonic. And then you have to deal with the people in science. People that are believe in science do not believe in spirits. They do not believe in the paranormal. How do you deal with your colleagues that are involved in science, that are science instructors? Do they mock you? Do they don't believe you? I mean, how are you dealing with them, and what kind of feedback do you get from them, knowing that with they knowing your story?
Well, thank you, Dennis. For me, I never necessarily try to prove anything. I try to share an experience. It's the kind of thing, how do you prove love? How does science prove love? You know, if I put a ring on your finger, do I love you? Perhaps, maybe not. And my experience is, if you feel loved, you probably are. In terms of the haunting and trying to prove the paranormal, some people are open to it and some are not. If you have a baseball game between the Phillies and the Mets, if the Phillies win the game, that is then a good game for the Phillies. It's a bad game for the Mets. And so subjectivity always comes into play when people look at certain evidences. So what I do is I just try to share my experience. If they're open to hearing it and learning about it, then I share that. If they're not in a place where they're able to hear that or want to hear that, I don't force the issue, because my competency, relevancy isn't based upon what they view my experience to be. And I know it's kind of like an esoteric answer, but I really don't make that effort. And I found that by sharing what happened, it does connect with people. Even if they look at it as a psychological case, if they look at it perhaps as witchcraft, if maybe it's going to be something with some kind of ancient history, making connection with people is a beautiful thing. And if we can connect on one level or two levels, even if there's not full agreement, I still think it's a positive thing. So I just think it's tough to try to prove things to people who don't want to hear it.
Do you miss the ghostly encounter? Do you wish it were still around?
No, not at all. In fact, up until the time I began to speak about it, it was the darkest chapter of my life. The fact that there are people now who will take their time to listen to me speak or ask questions about the events is very gratifying. You know, it's when you ask a soldier, do you miss being in active combat? They like fighting for their country, but active combat, they really, really miss the active combat, because they might see their family again, and it's a tough thing to have gone through. So I don't miss that chapter at all, no.
We got Frank in New York City. Hey, Frank, go ahead, sir.
Hey, hi, George and Christopher.
Hi.
You mentioned something about the Warren, that you met Miss Warren, I think, at an event at your college, if I got that correct. And that she kind of like, you know, didn't shake your hand, just looked at you and made a comment. I mean, with all respect to you, I just feel like, Christopher, that, you know, maybe she jinxed you or it hypnotized you. What do you think about that?
Well, it's hard to say. Going into that conference, that presentation they made, I didn't necessarily believe what they were doing. I thought it was like showmanship. They were very good at what they did. And so I didn't put much stock into any kind of sensitivity or paranormal abilities. When I met her, like I said, she wouldn't shake my hand, and my first thought was, she thinks I'm somebody else. And I think it's probably harder for someone to curse you or to, you know, affect your mindset if you don't put stock back into them. Over the years, looking back at what she said, she was probably correct to a degree in that she sensed something I didn't know in me that was a little bit different. And for the longest time, I have to say, I was discouraged by what she said. It made me upset. I didn't want to think about those things. And people ask me, have you met her since then? It's been 30 years. Have you, you know, you go around, have you met her? I haven't. And it's a silly kind of thing because this, the last time I met her, it wasn't a positive experience. It might be one this time, but I don't want to have a second negative experience. So just to protect my own emotional integrity, I haven't reached out yet. Probably I should.
Would you wish this haunting on anybody else, Chris?
No. It's. I know people say they wish they were there. If they were there, they would have done this. It's what an exciting time it was. But I wouldn't know. For me to remain authentic to my experience, I can't say, oh, yeah, I missed that. The fact of the matter is I do not, and I'm still to this day glad that it's over. I just try to learn from it now.
What do you think happened to the apparition, Tommy?
Well, my hope, George, is that it did find some kind of peace, some kind of rest. When you see suffering in anyone, whether it's a person you know, whether it's an animal, a pet, it hurts. It's sad to see. And I, like I said, this thing was suffering. It would wail. It would cry. It would scream. It would, you know, call. And so I think that remembering those moments, I just hope I did a good enough job to allow it to find some peace, a recognition of the value of that peace.
Was there any point that you thought you were going nuts?
Well, in the very beginning, yeah, because my definition of insanity would have been seeing things that aren't there. And I understand pessimism. I understand, you know, people not putting any stock in the words that I say today. It's probably a healthy reaction initially. But, you know, it's like anything else. When you're young, you think you know everything. And you're going to marry your first girlfriend. You're going to make $1 million in the stock market. That's just how it is. And as you get old, you realize you have to temper some of those thoughts with reality. And it's a blending process of trying to take your dreams and reality and making some positive construct from that. You know, as you know, you have an amazing show and you reach out to millions of people. It didn't happen because you just woke up one morning and said, I'm doing this. You worked over time to get where you are. You honed your craft and you dedicate yourself to what you do. And I think that's the answer.
And I was handed a pretty good base too. Made it easy for me.
Absolutely.
Let's go to David in Los Angeles. First time caller. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I had this bizarre encounter back in the 90s, about 20 years ago. It was rush hour in L.A., like 3 in the afternoon, during the week. It was a corner of El Segundo and Hawthorne. Beautiful day, not a cloud in the sky. As I marked through this intersection, the neighborhood completely deserted. All four directions, seemingly as far as the eye could see. I'm wondering, where is everybody? I make it to this intersection. I turn my head to the right. Suddenly, here's a little girl next to me, and she came out of nowhere. I think I said, like, where'd you come from? And she starts just rambling the whole time, and she's dressed like a doll. Looks like about 14, maybe Asian, big eyes. But they're, like, slanted upwards in the corner, more like black people's eyes. Not downward, like typical Asian eyes, but that's why I noticed all that. Just huge eyes and stunningly beautiful, easily the most stunning, beautiful child I've ever seen, period, and overly friendly almost to the point of being uncomfortable, but she's rambling the whole time. She's dressed like a doll. It's almost like a sort of modern-day version of the Wizard of Oz type Dorothy outfit.
Yeah.
That same sort of
that kind of look.
Blue, shoulder straps, short sleeve white T-shirt on, the bobby socks, and sort of old-style dress shoes for babies. So the entire outfit, probably more age-appropriate for like a 3 or 4-year-old. So you start there around 14, like she appeared to be. Now it's just strange. And the sort of butch haircut, really short, slick back, this really thick jet black hair, which sort of contrasts with the doll outfit with this sort of butch haircut. And she just...
What did she want?
I can't remember what she said. She's grabbing me the whole time, which is kind of hard to explain. I remember hearing her voice. She's speaking English, no accent. And again, I'm just totally bizarre. And remember, this is rush hour in L.A. The entire neighborhood is still completely deserted, all four directions, seemingly as far as I could see, almost like some sort of time displacement or dimensional shift, but who knows? Finally, the light turns red, and I'm like, hey, nice talking to you. I turn around, I start crossing the street, thinking, oh man, that was strange. Still looking around, entire neighborhood completely deserted, all four directions, during rush hour in L.A., as far as I could see almost. I'm like, where is everybody?
That's unheard of in L.A.
I make it to the other side of the street. I look back. She's gone. The building on the corner there definitely closed. There was clues over for it to disappear to. In time, I took across the street and looked back. So I'm like, and only after she was gone, then suddenly the traffic returned. Again, almost sort of a time displacement, dimension shift. But who knows? I have no idea. Completely bizarre. I didn't tell anybody this story for almost 20 years.
And David, you don't know if she was a ghost or a time traveler, right?
Yeah, like I said, it was the same common denominators. Big eyes, unusually beautiful, oddly dressed.
All right, Christopher, let's get your take on this for a second, if we can. The description, to me, doesn't mean it could have been a ghost.
Well, you know, it's hard to say because I don't have any commonality in experience to that. However, this is where I was, in essence, the first time I saw the impossible in that college room. And I would suggest to Dave three things. The first thing is perception. You know, what are you perceiving? What are you hearing? What are you feeling? What are you listening to? And try to record, write those things down for further review. The second thing is intent. What would the intent have been? Were they trying to show you something? Was it designed to prevent you from taking an action? Was it meant to show you some kind of future? And the third thing is application. You know, sharing that is a major step towards understanding it. You're reaching out, you're understanding what's happened to you. And application, how do you apply this now? In other words, what do you do? And maybe it's just that, asking people who had experiences what they think about that. I don't want to necessarily presuppose I understand exactly what happened there, but it's clear to me that this is something that you'd benefit from discussing with people, and I recommend that you do that.
What's the significance, Chris, do you think, of the people being gone and then everyone was there again?
There's a feeling of being alone in a crowd. There's a great amount of time during the haunting where I'd be stuck in that room, stuck in that dark room by myself, and all around me, the world progressed. People fall in love and laugh, eat their food. And even though I was surrounded by thousands of college students, I was by myself. And this is, in a way, almost an inversion of that, where you become the sole person in this environment around you. And I remember during the haunting, I had this dream where I'd be walking on the sidewalk. I was all by myself. On the other side, people were just walking away, much like the gentleman Dave is saying. And in that particular dream during the haunting, I'd find this cave, and I'd walk in. There'd be this glowing orb. It'd catch me. I'd wake up. I'd be sweating, and I'd have, like, sweat on my forehead and breathing hard. And a lot of times after that, I would have, like, heightened awareness or senses. So that could be something where his mind or body is telling him to pay attention to that. It's hard to say, of course, quantitatively.
Do you have any scars from your haunting episode?
I had marks on my back for approximately 6 months. And during the summer, I had to wear a T-shirt because people would ask me what happened to your back, and I wasn't ready to say. I'd usually say something silly like, well, some crazy girl in college. That was a pat answer. People like that answer.
You wish.
Yeah, well, that's how it is. That's why I say the answer that way. But by September, October, they faded away.
What about mental scars?
Oh, there has to be. And people might not know when talking with me during the course of the day. But, you know, it's at nighttime when the shadows come. It's a little different for me, you know, and I start to recall the moments and how things played out over time, you know. And so I think in that respect, for example, you know, I could tell you it's been 11,364 days since that thing left my room. And even though it hasn't happened for that long, I still wonder, will it happen again?
I wonder if you could sue the university for putting you in that room.
I wouldn't dare. You know, they do a great job at educating and giving people their degrees, so I wouldn't dare do that.
Robert, in Independence, I would assume Missouri, or are you in the Kansas? Welcome to the program.
Oh, on the Missouri side, George.
There you go. Okay, hi, Robert.
I was telling your producer, a friend of mine went to school at the Wentworth Military Academy about 40 miles east of Independence in Lexington, Missouri, and that was one of the historic battle towns during the Civil War. And at this military academy, there are hauntings that are just, the stories are phenomenal. You can see them on the internet if you just Google Wentworth Military Academy hauntings. A lot of first-person accounts, multiple groups of guys, because it's a male academy, would witness all kinds of supernatural, paranormal figures in stairwells. There's a barracks that's closed. They don't even house the guys there anymore, because not because the building structurally is inferior. It's just so haunted, so infested, and it has a long history. And this friend of mine that went to school there told me there's been interest from television producers that wanted to do stories on the academy, but they're afraid of bad press, and they've always denied these requests. And I said, well, what do you think the origins of these hauntings are? He goes, well, you have to understand that school goes back to the 1800s. And he said the battles, of course, there's always ghostly phenomena on battlefields. And on top of that, Lexington, Missouri is a river town. There are a lot of Indian burial mounds there on the battlefield even before the battle. So you have death upon death, tragedy upon tragedy that has just piled up over the years there. And it's evidently manifested itself at the Wentworth Military Academy. And I mean, I've lived in Missouri my whole life and had heard very little about these hauntings. And when he told me about it, I went on the internet. And it's, I guess my question for Chris is it to their advantage to just not let a lot of big publicity get out about this? Because Wentworth is known as one of the most haunted places in the state of Missouri. I'll take your response off the air. Okay.
And with social networking now, Chris, it's pretty difficult to hide these things, isn't it?
Absolutely. In regards to, you know, is it a smart thing or a good thing to hide evidence of the paranormal? I would say it depends. And I say that because the military really is designed to do one thing, and that is to keep you safe. And if the military says, well, we can't keep this building safe, we can't keep you safe in this building, how do we keep people safe externally? I think it poses a dilemma for them to actually advertise that. And I think that happens sometimes in corporations and universities and areas of science. So I understand why that's done. Also, there are many people out there, my experience has been, who want to make a name for themselves. And in other words, they're not necessarily looking to prove what's there, but only that they found it. And that also provides a risk factor element for institutions or buildings who open their doors up to those investigators. However, on the flip side, I think it's essential that as a species, we continue to look for answers, answers that will affect all of us, because as far as we understand, there's life and there's death for all of us. What's after that? That's what we debate.
We're going to come back with some final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast as we talk about Surviving Evidence, Memoir of an Extreme Haunting. Well, if you missed our announcement at the top of the program, because so many people have been wanting to get to know other people, we formed ParanormalDate.com. It's free to join. If you then want to really connect with people, use the code George for a steep discount. Okay, welcome back. Our final segment with Christopher DeCesare, his book, Surviving Evidence. I got to tell you, your cover's as spooky as the things you've been talking about tonight, Chris.
It's a great job. It's when you find talented people who invest in you, you invest back, and I'm honored that Mr. Tree did that cover.
Now, so we had the sci-fi program, which was Dorm Room Nightmare. Tell me also about the Scarecon. What happened there?
Well, Scarecon is an event that's in Western New York in Syracuse, and they invite horror celebrities and show movies in there. And at that event, an independent film, Please Talk With Me, was shown. And that was a film made by Sierra Productions that detailed the day-to-day haunting activities, as it were. And I was afraid to be a part of that, because many times movies make a joke or mockery of things, and as you know, it wasn't a fun time for us, but they decided to focus more on the people in the haunting, the impact of the trauma, than the ghost itself, which I appreciated. So I was very honored to be able to watch that film.
Incredible interest in ghost hunting. Any recommendations?
For locations, yeah, there's an amazing place. It's called the Shanley Hotel in Napanock, New York. And I don't go to many places, but I went there, and I had a very positive paranormal experience. The people there, Sal and his wife, are wonderful. It's a great place to go and visit.
Okay, let's go to the final calls now as they line up for you. John is in Florida, now on Coast to Coast, east of the Rockies. John, go ahead.
Thank you so much for having me on. Now,
sure thing.
I want to wish you, George, happy birthday.
Well,
and I have
thank
a little
you.
Gift for you. But for Chris, I have a comment and a question, very important for him. May I first give you your gift? It's a verbal gift. I heard you a few weeks ago talking about the Four Corner States.
Mm-hmm.
You can name them right off. I know you have them in your memory very well. What I'm giving you is never been given out to the public before. I created it when I was putting a U.S. map on my wife's elementary school wall at the beginning of the school year. It's a mnemonic device like Holmes. Holmes tells us what the five Great Lakes are. Have you heard Holmes before?
Yeah.
Okay, the one I've created, and this is the first time it's ever gone out to the public, it's very simple for those four corner states. Can you name them? You can. U-C-A-N. Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico.
And that's it.
Top to the bottom, left to right, just like a book.
You got it. Perfect.
That's a birthday gift for you, George.
Thank you, sir.
And another one is a little haunting. My mother-in-law, who lives with me, today is her birthday too, June 4th. And she's 93, mother of eight, and she was born the year of your father, 1922.
Yep, same thing.
And they had those numbers, 6422, for their birthday.
Yeah.
All right, now, for Chris, I have learned who the publisher is and where I can get your book, Kindle, Amazon.com, for example. And I majored in voice, in a four-year degree in that, and I have studied voices many years, observed, listened a lot. You have a remarkably young voice. I don't know if this experience helped you, but you must be at least 50, and your voice
yes,
sounds...
Yes, the big 50.
Yeah, you there. It's your voice sounds a 25-ish all the way.
I think it's because of the running I did, or the marathon. It kept me young, just staying active. But thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. It's better than being told you sound old.
Yeah, yes. What do you... My wife's a teacher. What do you teach, and what level of teaching do you do?
I teach secondary history in New York State, which would be global studies, U.S. history, economics, and government. And I love it. I love being able to share events with the students so that they learn what happened in the past, so they know how to do things, hopefully, more in a positive way in the future. And I think being a teacher, I didn't start out wanting to be a teacher because they tell you they pay a lot of money and it's thankless. But boy, when those students learn to read and when they graduate and they turn those tassels, I really tear up.
Oh, yeah. My wife had the same feeling, although hers are very young. She watches them go and graduate high school. And thank you so much, George. Happy, happy birthday.
Thank you, John. Appreciate
it. Way to go with your book, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Nice guy. Wasn't that nice, Chris?
Absolutely.
And you do sound half your age, for crying out loud. That's great.
Oh, yes, but I should thank who? My wife, my kids, whoever it is, I thank all of them because health is so important, you know?
We'll go to Spokane, Washington now. Josh is with us. Hey, Josh, thanks for calling, sir. Go ahead. Josh? Well, I'm not going to thank you for calling.
I hope he's okay.
Yeah, me too. West of Phoenix, we're going to Adrian now on the wild card line. Adrian, thank you. Go ahead.
Hey, George, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
Can I ask you a question about... your UFO thing that you do in California every year?
Let's go for Chris first, and then I'll let you ask me a question after that.
Okay. Hey, Chris, I really validate what you do. I've never been a personal experience in hauntings, but I know people that have and everything. and I believe in reincarnation, and I've been on my body too many times to believe that, you know, not believe that we don't reincarnate ourselves. And from what I know from my study from spiritualism is that a lot of times when you die a horrific death or something like that, you just get stuck in time. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, sure. You know, I've met a lot of people throughout my life, and their beliefs have varied, everything from Hindu to secularism to Catholicism. And one thing I can say is this. I've learned that all those belief systems have something positive about them, and most of those systems ask for things like respect, understanding, decency. So I'm a big believer in people looking for answers through concepts, through faith, through religion, through those esoteric, constructs. So I think it's great, and I thank you for calling.
Okay, Adrian, what was your UFO question?
Yeah, well, what I've figured out from all that, what you said, Chris, was that it all has to do with experience.
I would say, yeah, that's a lot of it.
Okay. I guess he forgot his UFO question. RJ, let's go to you somewhere. Where are you, RJ?
Hey, George, this is RJ Smith down in Miami. I was actually just with Chris last week up where he works at the Kaplan School.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great.
Hi, RJ.
I did. Hey, what's going on, Christopher? You're doing a great job, man.
Oh, thank you, sir.
I actually was just up there and did an investigation on this very old school and campus where he works. There's some haunted stories there. And, I was reading his book. It's the first time I met him. And there's a section in the book where the ghost actually kind of attacks him in the bathroom. And I wanted him to tell you about that. It was really cool.
Yeah, you were talking, was that the shower episode, or is that something else, Chris?
Absolutely. That was the actual physical attack. And people ask me, what was the scariest moment? It was that, because I really thought I was going to die.
Was that because of the marks on your body?
Absolutely. And that's from the neck down, exactly right. And I remember people heard me screaming, and they ran in, and Jeff pulled me out of the room, and they wanted to send me to the hospital. And I said to them, no, I'm not going to go there, because my thought was back then they would sedate me. They would think I was hurting myself.
They might have thought there was something wrong with you.
Yeah, and they wanted the pictures of my back. They said, let's take some pictures of your back. And I said to them, please don't. Please. I'm in a very sensitive spot right now. I don't have reminders of that. And there was like a moment of silence. And Jeff, I'll thank him forever. He said, you know what? I understand why you wouldn't want any pictures. I will take the picture. But let me tell you something. For me, that was friendship, because he respected my need at that moment over what the overriding, thought process was. And that's what friends do. Friends support you in your
sure.
moments of weakness.
Though difficult, because the compulsion is to get you into a hospital, that you needed help. Maybe they thought, you were self-abusing yourself or something.
Well, I agreed to a compromise. They got cotton swabs, peroxidum Band-Aids, and for 47 minutes, I watched the clock, 47 minutes, they did that on my back. It was peroxide, the cotton swab, Band-Aid, and all on my back. And so I had this Frankenstein kind of line of Band-Aids down my back for about 2 weeks. But that's as best I would do, because I told them I'd fight them. I would literally fight my friends not to go to the hospital, because for me, I was on the run. I kept moving away from this thing. If they kept me in one spot and I was sated, I couldn't get away from it, and then ultimately I lost control of what I wanted. And that's why when years later, we have this Bin Laden guy going from these caves, I understood, because if you're afraid of being caught, you want to keep on moving. So it's interesting how sometimes in life you see patterns of behavior.
When this episode finally stopped after several months, other than it being gone, did you feel anything? Was there anything special where you knew it was gone?
Well, there was one moment about 4 or 5 days after I spoke with Tommy to say goodbye, basically, and say you have to go. And I was sitting with a friend, and we both noticed that the room lit up a little bit. And I could have sworn I don't have a camera or things, but it was there, this ghost hovering by the ceiling, and just for a brief instant. And my thought at the moment was, and maybe it's just wishful thinking, he was saying goodbye. It was like saying goodbye, I'm going to go up now and rest. And again, I was 19, I didn't know a whole lot, but it seemed to me at that moment he was saying goodbye. And if that were the case, then I'm very gratified. And if not, it could have been my mind thinking that, but at least it shows you my desire or intent was to have this soul find rest.
Let's go to Florence, Alabama now. Good morning, Wanda. You're up with us.
Thank you.
Sure.
Chris, when I was 13 years of age, I had a man, I was still with my sister, who was older, and I began to see a man standing in the doorway in the bedroom. He scared me. He was there just about all night. Next day, I told my sister I would never come back to her house. I waited about 11 months, and I did go back to her house. When I did go back, the man began to show himself to my sister, brother-in-law, and the young four-year-old. It got so bad that they had to move. But before we moved, we found out that the guy next door committed suicide by hanging.
Oh, boy.
Okay, well, I was 13. This man followed me around till I was 16. And my dog's barking, sorry.
That's okay. And when you say a man, Wanda, do you mean an apparition?
Yes. You could see his, he was redheaded, beard. I could see his shirt and I guess jeans, but it's really from the top up. But he was talking to the four-year-old, and she was telling us that she was talking to Jesus, and that he jumped in the closet when we walked in, and she described him.
Huh.
But jumping on further, when I was 16, I was at a girlfriend's house, and one night the attic door kept popping open. We thought somebody was upstairs. We went and called the police. Police came there, went upstairs in the attic, and, you know, looked. Came back downstairs, and they said they don't know what we've seen, but they thought it was the best thing that we'd get out of there. As we were leaving, the police was shining the lights up in the attic. The police and me and my friends, we all saw that same man standing there. The police ran and jumped in the car and took off.
Oh, my goodness.
It freaked everybody out. Now, due to that, I guess because it began early, you know, 13, I've had just different, you know, things. I'm like, I've woken up at night with a man laying in my bed. Never seen him before. Want me to get in contact with his dead relatives. And I'm like, no. But I'm afraid of this stuff, and I don't want to get involved in it.
I think it would be kind of creepy to wake up in the morning and have somebody in your bed and you had no idea how they got there, Chris.
I second that. I second that emotion. When I was in college, I was trying to understand what this all meant. And the parapsychologist did an amazing thing. He put it into terms I understood. He asked me, how is it possible you can know there's a boat in the water but not see it? And I realized the boat's wake. A boat leaves a V shape behind it. So even though you don't see the boat itself, you see the impact on its environment, and you know it was there. He told me that same boat will displace or lift the water in front of the boat. If you're sensitive, you might notice the water going up before the boat gets there, which in a way would be like precognition. So I always try to go back to that thought to think, maybe some of these things are some type of pseudoscience. We just can't measure things. Years ago, there were no germs. We didn't see a germ before. Maybe God was making us sick. We drilled holes in heads. And I think as science advances, we might learn more about what's going on with the paranormal and these spirits and ghosts. But that is a terrifying thing, especially being so young. And I commend you for moving forward in spite of that and having the bravery to share that.
Couple minutes left. Couple more calls to go. Let's go to Lost Hills, California. Joel, thank you, sir. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
George, good morning.
Morning, George.
Hello.
Good morning. Real quick, I just experienced something very weird. I use an iPhone.
All right.
And I use Siri to call my fiance. Well, earlier before that, I was listening to the show. I was joking about this new thing, Charlie, going on. So I used Siri. And it asked me, who would you like to contact? And I said my fiance's name. And Siri says, I am an identity that is not found, something, something, and I get that from hell. That's what Siri told me.
Well, in that game, Charlie is dangerous.
I was just joking about it, like, to my fiance.
Yeah, that's just... Have you heard of that, Chris?
Yes, I have, and I'm glad it's not Tommy Tummy.
Yeah, that's true, too. I mean, that's a serious game, though.
Absolutely.
It's worse than a Ouija board, I think.
Yeah. Any time I think where you might invoke something in any aspect of your life that's dangerous, you have to think twice about that.
Your book, Surviving Evidence, I have to tell you, is very comprehensive. With a book that's dealing with this episode, the story. But it's a mixture of your life and this haunting.
Right. Well, you know, I didn't necessarily want to write a book over the years, but the publisher for Dark Moon Press, Eric Werner, I met him at a conference. He said, listen, you know what? There's a sci-fi show, there's a movie, but you should really take the time to put things in your own words. This way, when you're gone, there's a record of what you said and what you went through. And I thought, you know what, that's probably a pretty good idea because maybe somebody will glean something from what I experienced and it will help them, you know. So I sat down and I wrote the book, believe it or not, in 6 days. Because for
6 days?
Six calendar days on my winter break. Because for 28 years, it was in my head. I just needed a way to express it. So So these thoughts have been developed. Just what do you do with them? So I sat down, I played some 80s music, and in 6 days I pushed it out. And I think it does a good job of explaining what it's like to go through those things. And listen, George, I am absolutely blessed and honored people take the time to talk to me, that they take the time to read the book, because it helps to ease some of the sadness I had back then and make it meaningful.
I'm glad you came out of it the way you have, Chris.
Thank you.
You take care of yourself. Surviving Evidence, Another Haunting. And let me tell you something. Here we are in June. It's just a few more months to go until we get to October. It'll be up here faster than you think. And we'll be having more and more stories like this for you on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Bobo Johnson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.